The Glenda Rich walkout, why the state superintendent shut down a meeting of the State Board of Education, the Rich approval rating, poll numbers that show support for gun control, and growing opposition to the marriage amendment. That, plus Todd Young on Obamacare, a soldier's homecoming, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 15, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz stormed out of a State Board of Education meeting after refusing to allow a vote on a controversial education proposal. It happened after board member Brad Oliver called for a vote on a plan that would shift oversight of a career readiness program to an agency controlled by Governor Mike Pence. Ritz refused to hear the motion.
This meeting is adjourned.
That should be a vote on adjournment.
This meeting is adjourned.
Council, does that have to be a vote on adjournment?
You can't adjourn without a second, can you?
This meeting is adjourned.
You can't adjourn a meeting without.
Is this a battle Glenda Ritz can win? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Tim Berry. John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Tim Berry, is the governor trying to take power away from Glenda Ritz?
No. Statute says that the Board of Education sets education policy. The board was trying to conduct its business. Brad Oliver had presented the resolution to the superintendent, had gone over it with her personally, had gone over it with her staff, had revised it based on some of their recommendations, and then she doesn't want to hear it at the board meeting? We need to move education forward, and we have moved education forward, taken a lot of progressive steps over the last few years, and we're just stalling now one time after another.
Glenda Ritz did this on the day after she sent a letter to the editor that accused Mike Pence of attempting a takeover of education
policy. That's clearly what he's doing. That's clearly what he's doing. And it's a good thing for you, Tim, that it's not raining and thunder and lightning out there, because you really think that we'd be having this discussion if the former Republican Tony Bennett were in that office? Do you actually think they would have spent $5 million of education money to put another layer of bureaucracy over education to try to nullify what the voters did last year? The voters chose not to follow the Republican education policies. They may not have known a lot about Glenda Ritz when they voted for her, but they knew she wasn't Tony Bennett, and that's what they wanted. And now they're trying to usurp her power and nullify the election. And that's what's going on. She's right.
Who's responsible for education? Is it the governor or the state school superintendent?
Well, traditionally, the school superintendent and the board, Board of Education, has set the policy for the state for education. All the money flows through those organizations and into the schools around the state. When it comes to deciding what kind of books to use, when it comes to deciding qualifications for teachers, all of those things have historically gone through the Board of Education. That's why there is such a uncertainty and difficulty, because of the circumstances that have been described. We do have now effectively two boards, and there is a factional war between the current superintendent, the governor's office, and the General Assembly.
And the governor today wrote Glenda Ritz and the members of the State Board of Education and said that he's contacted the National Association of State School Boards and that they're willing to come in and facilitate a discussion so that everybody can have their roles defined. Will that help?
No, because this is a debate that's not just taking place at the Indiana State House. this is in many ways a national debate. There are 14 states right now, including Indiana, that have elected state superintendents of public instruction. And I'm guessing that the governors...
The others are appointed.
The others are appointed either by governors or by boards that ostensibly are...
Work for the governor.
Work for the governor. So let's call them gubernatorial appointments. And I'm guessing that for the most part, when you have the opposing party in a superintendent's position, I'm guessing of those 14 governors that have that situation, I'm guessing, maybe 100% of them probably would love to have that be an appointed position. Theoretically, that could happen here over time. It's in the Constitution that it's a position.
She's going to serve another 3 years.
In terms of the selection, it could be a statutory change. But this is something
that's been attempted before unsuccessfully.
Right. But this is, again, my point is this has happened other places. North Carolina, for instance, it was ended up in court. It may very well here. But Wyoming.
We had that same difference in policy and difference in political party for years. When we had a Republican superintendent of public instruction,
and
a Democratic governor, several Democratic governors, and they worked together. They didn't try to take all her power away.
You got
to
remember, this is a bipartisan board.
Come on, they're all gubernatorial appointments.
Now, this is all going on in a supercharged political atmosphere. In the meantime, the day after the walkout, the Inspector General recommended ethics charges against Tony Bennett for doing political work on his computer. That doesn't help any of this, does it?
Well, there's going to be a hearing in January. Those are two different issues. I think the issue that we're talking about here is the fact that this week the superintendent walked out on school children across this state, and they're trying to do the jobs that they were required to do by statute.
Come on. The statute requires the superintendent to be in charge of this, and that's what you're trying to take away.
Wait a minute. I know a thing or two about being an administrative statewide official.
Good for you, but that doesn't mean that you know enough about taking power away from an elected official.
And I know what the role of an administrator is, and that is not to implement policy. That is to go out and create policy, but to implement policies that are created by the board.
Yeah. Still with this, the exclusive Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey shows that Glenda Ritz is largely unknown. The approval rating for the Democrat is 16%. The disapproval is at only 7%. That's because a whopping 77% of adults who were questioned say they don't have enough information to form an opinion about Ritz's performance in office. Even Ritz supporter Tim Lannon was surprised.
I think there is a perception which is well-founded that she has a base that certainly knows her much better than that. Those statistics reflect, and which can be mobilized.
And Delaney, how does that square with Ritz's belief that she has a mandate?
Well, I think I explained it before. The mandate was to stop the Republican overall frontal assault on public education. The public was dissatisfied with the Republican approach to that, and they wanted it stopped. Now, the fact that they don't know Glenda Ritz very well doesn't surprise me. I bet you if you put Greg Zeller, who's been the Attorney General for 5 years, up on that, he'd probably get, 5 or 6 more points? Nobody knows statewide officials, with the possible exception of the governor and the senators,
Tim Berry. Trust me.
Yeah. No, I'm told Republican polling last year showed that Tony Bennett was in the mid-40s.
And look what it did for him. There he was in the mid-40s because they knew him and they didn't like him.
Well, I think what she's doing right now is because she knows that no one knows who she is. Trying to create a name for herself getting on the front page of the newspapers and in the news and
she's
getting people
news.
Talking about it.
I'll give her that.
And that is one
news.
Way
she's
to build your
news,
name ID.
And the governor's doing it by putting this whole $5 million extra layer of bureaucracy.
Okay. What we're trying to do is streamline education.
Yeah. Hypothetical question, John. Let's say Glenda Ritz is right, that she is facing an effort to take away her power. Is this the best way to respond? She filed a lawsuit. It was dismissed. Now she's walked out on a meeting. Is she approaching this tactically in the proper way?
I'm not sure she has a lot of options, because when you look at the board that she in theory chairs, and I guess technically does, she legally does, but she's surrounded by people, whether they bear an R or a D label, they're all appointees of either this governor or his Republican predecessor. So there's not a whole lot, it seems to me, she can do. You could make the same argument, Jim, that back in August when through executive order, the Pence administration created the Center for Education and Innovation. Maybe that was maybe they should have said, let's take a different approach and let's work through the legislative process rather than creating something. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a question, I suppose, you could say on both sides about the approach they've taken. Both, they're strong arm tactics on both hands. It just so happens that the cards that have been dealt to Mike Pence are a lot better. It's a lot better hand than what Glenda Ritz is holding.
John Katzenberger, does this get better before it gets worse?
Wait a minute. Describe that. I think it gets worse before it gets better. I think that the scenario that John described is absolutely in place. You have almost intractable positions on both sides of the issue right now, and I don't see a clear way out of it without an all-out brawl, and that's not going to be good.
Let's remember that a member of that board is the husband of the former spokesperson for the State Democratic Party.
So what?
Gordon Hendry, recent appointee of Governor Pence.
That's correct.
So it's one vote.
Who has been at odds with Glenda Ritz.
Yeah, and one vote.
Is he stopping this? No.
What is he supposed to do, lay his body down in front of the table?
Right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you think Glenda Ritz is doing a good job? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, who is Glenda Ritz? Last week's question was, with no elections in Indiana, what did you do on election day? 74% said followed results from Virginia, New Jersey, and elsewhere. 5% said longed for campaign activity here. 21% said I was unaware it was election day. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey also finds significant support in Indiana for new gun control measures. The poll found that 83% of adults in Indiana support background checks at gun shows. Just 16% are opposed. A ban on assault-style weapons wins support from 54%. 44% oppose that ban. We showed those results to IU professor Paul Helmke. Helmke is the former head of the Brady campaign to prevent gun violence. He says elected officials need to see them too.
I think they need to see these numbers and wake up to the reality of what Hoosiers think about this.
People want that part of our Constitution guarded quite vigorously. I happen to think that if the Second Amendment's part of the Constitution, it's my duty to be defensive of it.
That's Congressman Todd Young, obviously not swayed by the numbers. John Katzenberger, is Indiana still gun-friendly?
Short answer is absolutely yes. I don't see any traction for either of those issues in the General Assembly.
They're more likely issues for Congress.
Well, but the General Assembly is also, I mean, the regulating gun shows could be done on a state-by-state basis, and that's not going to happen. So I don't see any movement at all. When it comes to Indiana, and it is very much a gun-friendly state.
These numbers are within a couple of percentage points of national numbers, which was surprising to Helmke and others.
Maybe that is surprising, that there seems to be such a large majority that would, for instance, support a ban on assault weapons or background, larger even would be the case you cited with background checks at gun shows. The issue, what that doesn't necessarily reflect, though, Jim, is it was, what, 83-16, right? The 16%. I'm guessing that a good percentage of that 16% minority would be our single-issue voters. In other words, they would go and campaign actively or vote largely on that issue and be driven and motivated by that issue.
That
I'm guessing
be.
Among the 83%, it's just one of X number of issues, and it's not going. So, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is that may not reflect the passions of Hoosier voters, which is another very important layer on this issue.
What matters more to lawmakers, what the NRA thinks or what the public thinks?
Well, I think certainly public opinion is very important, but also protecting constitutional rights is very important to lawmakers through that process. I think the bigger question here is, you know, people are concerned about gun and gun violence, but where are those people getting those guns that are committing the crimes? And I'm guessing that a lot of that's not happening there. I think a lot of them are getting them elsewhere through secondary markets.
Well, there are a lot of illegal guns out on the street, but they got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans don't care about public opinion on this issue. The NRA controls, and it always has, and it still does in Indiana. What you're seeing here, though, is a public perception that's changing. And I think that 16%, there are no absolute constitutional rights. There's a First Amendment right of free speech, but you can still be held for libel and slander, and you can still restrict and do in background checks, and it has nothing to do with whether or not you have a constitutional right for that. It's common sense. It's where Joe Donnelly has been. It's where the public is, and, you know, Indiana needs to stand up to the NRA and tell them it's time to have some common sense legislation in this regard. Too many people are dying.
Opposition to a permanent ban on same-sex marriage in Indiana is growing. That's also one of the findings in the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey. It found that just 38% of adults in Indiana support the marriage amendment that would create a constitutional ban on gay marriage. 58% are opposed. Lawmakers will decide in 2014 if the marriage amendment should go to a statewide referendum.
I think legislators are genuinely trying to figure out where people stand on the issue, and, you know, I hope that this impacts them to understand that folks are against this amendment.
If every poll was getting these kinds of numbers, you'd see far less opposition on the other side. They'd just say, let's count the votes if they have something that approaches 57% support.
Meantime, while 14 states now allow gay marriage, people here are split over the idea. The Hoosier survey found that 48% are in favor of legalization, 46% are opposed. That's a statistical tie, John Schwannis. Will those numbers sway lawmakers?
They'll play a part, but I think there are so many other forces already in place that point in that same to that same conclusion. This is just another element. But public opinion expressed in this fashion, public opinion expressed through the very public stance that has been taken by, for instance, universities, large employers. Today, for instance, the League of Women Voters, which is not could probably not be accused of being, you know, a bunch of crazies. I mean, they pretty much represent about as the core values in most issues. You know, yeah. Fair, open elections, transparency, and equal rights.
They joined Freedom Indiana.
They joined Freedom Indiana today.
So Ball State did earlier this week too, quite unrelated to this poll, by the way.
But I do think this is just indication. It's another piece that will lead ultimately probably to a decision. Not to ratify the amendment this time around.
Wow, that's an interesting prediction.
Okay. Mike McDaniel, when he's here, likes to point out that it got 80 votes. The marriage amendment got 80 votes the last time it was up in the House. There's been a defection by Republican Sean Eberhardt of Shelbyville, who says he'll vote the other way, but apparently he's not very comfortable with that. He wouldn't agree to be interviewed this week. Is that just a crack, or is it a sign of something bigger?
Well, I think that I think the amendment, if it comes to a vote on the floor, will pass, and that it will be on the ballot next year. I don't think it will be by 80 votes in the House, or by whatever it was, 38, something like that, or more in the Senate. I think it will be a closer margin. I do think that the legislature has seen the tide of public opinion starting to turn, and has been turning now for several years. And I think also people who are proponents of the ban. Ought to be, if they aren't, ought to be concerned with this going on to the ballot and then getting passed. Because I, unlike Mike, think that this will that the amendment would be defeated if it goes to the
public. You're saying that,
and I think the public is very much against putting this ban in. And I think if that is expressed, then there might be sentiment to deal with the statute.
Let me just make one point about the scenario.
Quickly.
And all I'm going to say is. You change any word in the proposed amendment, of course.
Well,
but the clock starts again. And so you may find people who are generally supportive might say, we'll allow a tweak, the clock starts over, and then it has to be two more.
You're going to see Brian Bosma pull a fast one. What you're going to do is see him get a legal opinion that the second sentence can be deleted without going through the process again to put it on the ballot.
And still go put it on the referendum.
And then what he'll do then, of course, will trigger legislation so it doesn't go on the ballot, so he can say to the Tea Party he was out there with them and then still do the other. But having said that, regardless of whether or not you think gay marriage ought to be allowed in Indiana, this isn't about that. This is right. about building discrimination into Indiana's constitution.
Right.
And I think a vast majority of people find that offensive.
Right. A year ago, this poll showed 54% opposed. It's actually 57.5% this year, rounds up to 58. That's within the margin of error, but it seems to indicate a trend. Do you believe there's a trend?
You know, there certainly is a lot of diversity of thought within our party, and we saw a change in Representative Eberhardt this week, who had supported it in 2011.
Yeah. And do you see a trend?
I think what we're
seeing. If you saw a trend, would you say so?
No.
Well, I think this is what the legislature is going to determine this year in the General Assembly.
All right, moving on. Indiana Congressman Todd Young delivered the weekly GOP address. In it, he called for changes in Obamacare.
This is what betrayal looks like. Here you have hardworking people who were repeatedly told not to worry, that their coverage would stay the same, and if anything, their costs would go down. Just the opposite's happening.
And, Delaney, did the president hear that?
Todd Young? I don't think so. I mean, what he did here is pretty clear. I mean, he started out saying that if you work for a large employer and you have health insurance, that won't change. And over the course from 2009 to 2011, he got loose with that and said, you won't change. And obviously, he's going to allow that to continue up to the subject to the states for another year. Many of those policies, however, are substandard policies, okay, and they're not paying very much for them. But when they blow through the cap or whatever else, what happens to the rest of those bills? Are we supposed to pick them up? And the answer is yes, which is why it can't be allowed to continue indefinitely.
Todd Young got asked to deliver that address because a couple of weeks ago in a congressional hearing, he held up a cancellation letter and told the story of the effect that Obamacare was having on one Indiana family. All of a sudden, we see every Republican in Congress from Indiana sending out news releases telling similar stories. I mean, you've all hit on a strategy here.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if President Obama heard Representative Young, but certainly Bill Clinton did. Because earlier this week, President Clinton agreed with Todd Young on this position that something has to be done, that people are frustrated by the process, they can't sign up, no one is signing up for Obamacare, and that we need to make some changes and adjustments.
Well, Todd Young,
it's actually not true that nobody is signing up, and
well,
they do.
Well, what was how many
Indiana
people signed
what
up
is it,
in
6,000? 6,000
well,
in Indiana have been successful.
If we had a state exchange, if we expanded Medicaid like Kentucky did, if we responded, correctly,
in the first week.
We could have 400,000 people covered.
The Wish TV Ball State poll also found that the public didn't like the idea of expanding Medicaid.
Well, they're not also, the people who are answering that are probably not on Medicaid.
And okay. That's also probably one of those questions where it's all in the wording.
Yeah, exactly.
You say expand Medicaid means
people
one thing. You say, would you want to expand a program if the federal government for 3 years promised to pay 100% and 90%+ after that? Yeah. And I know it's all
the taxpayers are paying.
I know.
Well,
I know.
We're paying anyway. Yeah,
You buried your lead. What I found interesting is I was curious a week or two ago about how these weekly addresses are chosen, and you mentioned it was leadership in the caucus leadership. So we have John Boehner, Speaker of the House,
right,
who apparently cites your story.
He did.
Literally.
They had a link to our story in his news release when he announced Todd Young's
doing this.
Selection.
So clearly, you have the speaker's ear. I don't know. This will be interesting.
Who
are you going to have next week to do the address?
Holy smoke. Careful.
Yeah.
Careful.
Yeah.
What do I say after that?
Yeah.
That's Indiana.
Does this help Todd Young? He also got chosen because he has a bill.
None of this hurts Todd Young. I mean, the platform is good for him. He delivered the speech well. He's got the speaker's attention, and so that's all good for Todd Young.
Finally, a Florida family got the surprise of a lifetime this week at a Colts game. Both parents are on active duty in the Army. Sergeant First Class Jeremy Eno is deployed with the Special Forces. Well, just this week, the family car broke down. So at halftime, kicker Pat McAfee presented the family with a brand new car he bought for them. But inside the car was an even bigger surprise.
Welcome home.
Tim Berry, does that sort of thing ever get old?
No, it doesn't get old, and it almost makes even losing the game little in comparison.
That was the best story. Part of the Colts game that day.
It was a great story, and Pat McAfee truly is reaching out and contributing to this community and making an impact.
He's done a lot to rehabilitate himself. There's no question about that. I can think of a couple of others that might want to do the same thing.
Yeah, nice way also to recognize Veterans Day. That was
absolutely
the day before. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.